This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 110, and I'm your host, Simon Bound. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases and other related events. And every Thursday I release an episode called UFO Encounters, so please check them out. And if you want to hear the extended version of this interview, you can join the Patreon campaign. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So this week I'm talking to Dana Louise about her book. It's called This Is Gonna Sound Weird, an awakening memoir of a woman's close encounter experiences. Dana has had encounters with ETs since she was very young. Hi Dana, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Simon, for inviting me. I'm so honored and thrilled to be here.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called This Is Gonna Sound Weird, an awakening memoir of a woman's close encounter experiences. This has started for you when you were very young, didn't it? It's not like it happened in your 20s and then it's never happened again.
Right. So for me, I know I was in my crib, you know, a babe in diapers. And the thing is, when you, I think most people in their childhood, you know, a bubolic childhood, they might not remember being a toddler or anything like that. But I think when you face death or something that's very traumatic, it wakes you up. And so, and I think then you're running on all your cylinders and your memory is engaged because this might be your last day. And I think that's what happened to me because I do remember being in my crib, the bigger crib, the crib with the, you know, the gate that you raise and lower. And so it started then, and it started with the grays. And it started in the middle of the night. And it happened so many times that I can't tell you how often it was. And I do know that sometimes I had zero recollection of their visit as I got older, but the next day I would be changed and transformed. Being near them had some sort of effect on my physiology. So I would have like electrical charges, you know, things like that. I'd walk past some electronics or something and it would go wonky. And so then I would be like, I must have had a visitation. When I was older and could walk, I do recall walking them through the kitchen, showing them the little dogs we had, all these kinds of things, kind of like giving them a tour. But at first it started in my crib late at night. And I was awakened by, we had these old timey window shades that ran on a, like a magnetic pole system. I don't know how to describe it, but the shade would go zooming up in the middle of the night, you know, just flap, 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 flap. It's something that kids would do and the parents would all get upset. Like, don't do that. You're going to break it. You're going to rip it or whatever. So, you know, it's like, no, you know, don't do that. But the shade would go up, which would bring my attention to the window. And I do remember, you know, being in the crib and this happening. And my immediate thought would be, you know, oh, I'm in trouble. I didn't do it. My parents are going to come running in, and or is my brother or sister in the room? What are they doing? You know, everyone's being not like, what's going on? And I looked in the window and there was this like a gray balloon, you know, in the shape of a balloon, you know, larger at the top, pointy where the chin would be, and these eyes. And I knew that that was wrong. Something was wrong. I mean, what is this? And it, and that's the discourse. It's like you walk around as a human and you see human things. And then all of a sudden this, you know, it's not portrayed in a book or anything, but you know, I'm tiny, 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 you know, and I knew it was wrong, you know, and then the next thing I know, these balloon faces, I mean, I would typically just see one in the window. And then the next thing, they're coming over the crib. They're smiling at me. And then I blank out. And that's kind of a problem, is a lot of the times I would blank out. For most all of my experiences, and I've met three different species, and one of them, hopefully we'll get into this, I've only seen a depiction, a drawing that was somewhat close to these. And these are, this was a more traumatic event than just meeting the grays. But, you know, I blank out. And there's a part of me that thinks, would I want to do hypnosis to know what happened? And I don't know if I'm brave enough yet. I mean, you know, I might leave this planet not wanting to know.
I was being taken through a past life regression once, and that jumped to a sort of alien abduction thing with me. And it was not like we were trying to find that. We were doing a past life regression, and then it just came out up in my brain, and I've got no conscious memories at all of ever having any interaction.
Right. And I think that might be very, very true with most people. I have a feeling that there's a lot of people out there that have had experiences, but they never woke up. They were never aware. They might not have had any physical issues the next day. But for you, you know, this came forward. And I think, you know, during a hypnosis event, and I think that if more people did that, that would come forward. So obviously that story needed to come forward for you on some level.
Yeah, but it's like you're saying, you might not want to know. And that happened to me a few years ago, and I haven't gone back and tried to search out if there's any more memories.
Right. And I did do a past life regression, and I wrote about it in my book. And I, you know, almost everything I believe in, I've had to experience. So before I had a past life regression, I would tell you, I don't know. I don't know if I believe in that, but I've experienced it, and the experience was so real. Now I do believe in it. And that goes through many different supernatural things like crop circles. Like, I don't know. So, you know, which is hilarious to me because my book is so full of just these weird, bizarre stories that if I hadn't experienced them, I wouldn't believe them at all. You know, I would be like, that's too bizarre. That's too weird. But it's also so bizarre. How can you make it up? I can't. You know, I'm inventive, but some of it is just too outlandish. And yeah, so, you know, a lot of my experiences, you know, I started to be drawn out at night to see the spaceships overhead. You know, so I'm experiencing all these things, and, you know, there's no one to talk to for most all of my life. And actually, Whitley Strieber's book, Communion, had a gray alien on the cover. And I don't think I'd ever seen like a good depiction of a gray. Usually they were like little green Martians or something like that. That's fine. But to see that cover was almost triggering for me. It was triggering and elating because it's like, somebody else knows. You know, I'm not so alone. There might be a community out there, you know, and this is back in the 80s.
So I wanted to ask, so when you were very young and it seemed like they were coming to see you often and throughout the years, do you think your family ever noticed anything like lights outside or movement in the house or something?
No, they were out. And so I do believe that there's some kind of programming or some kind of frequency. I think when aliens visit you, there's a frequency level. The room is different. It shifts. It doesn't feel like a normal room. There's an intensity to it. And that might blank people out. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I think it's intentional. However, I'll be 62 in April. And about 5 or 8 years ago on Facebook, the girl who lived behind me, she popped up. So I'm like, hey, let's meet. Let's go have a cocktail. And she's just a very normal muggle. She's just the most normal person ever. and we're talking, and all of a sudden spirit just started to bubble up. And I started to talk about the aliens. So I had these two voices going on in my head. One was talking physically about the aliens, and my little voice was saying, "Oh my God, don't say anything. Oh my God, she's going to think you're a nut. You're never going to see her again." And as this discussion was going on, she reached across the table and she put her hand on top of mine and she said, "Dana, I remember it." And I said, "What?" And she said, "I remember the humming. I remember the vibrations." And she said, "I remember laying in my crib being petrified. What is going on outside in the middle of the night?" And she remembers this happening a number of times as well. I about fell on the floor because she's just like the most normal person in the world. And I thought she was going to, you know, X me out of her life. And instead she drew me in closer. And that was another witness for me, another confirmation for me, because throughout my life, so many strange things have happened. And many times there were witnesses. And I was like, "Why, God, why so many witnesses?" And now I know. It's not only for me and my own sanity, because they remind me, no, that happened. But it is also good for other people in the public to know that, yeah, there were other people. And real quick, speaking of going out at night and seeing the ships and being on the ships, there was a time when I think it was about in junior high, and there was a local TV show, and they would talk about hot dish and brownies and just very jocular. And at the end, they would open up the microphones. So the night before, I was sleeping and I just got up like a robot. I just got up and went to the window and looked out the window. And you could see Minneapolis from where I live, just kind of off in the distance. But all of a sudden, a ship, because this is, we're talking about UFOs here, and this is an actual physical ship, zoomed past. Now, we were about two blocks away from the Mississippi River. And so this ship is zooming down towards Minneapolis. And, you know, I sat there, I watched it, and I went back to bed. I didn't have to pee or, you know, anything, you know, like that would wake you up or any noises or anything. Went to school, came home. The program is on TV, typical, you know, my mom's ironing or whatever. At the end of the show, they opened up the microphones and the first caller was a man. Now, this is 3 p.m, so it's like it's unusual for a man to be calling in. And he's like, "Hey, did anybody see that spaceship last night?" And right away, I was like, I mean, I just about died. And I ran to the TV and they're like, oh, you know, "That's so funny." And click, they hung up on him. "Oh, next caller, please." You know, and it's another man. And he goes, "Yeah, I did. Did anybody see the military chasing after them?" And I was like, "Oh my God, that was real, what I saw." And these two people who don't know each other either in the Twin Cities area, they saw it too. Now, I don't know if the television station has that beta tape on their shelf getting dusty, but they might, you know, hopefully, you know. So there's a lot of activity in the Twin Cities area, and there's a lot of reasons. And I don't know how much time we have, because I do kind of feel that my story that you read about the two different species of aliens that came in that one night, I feel like it's important to talk about them. That's the feeling that's bubbling up with me. But this story that I just finished is an actual UFO account that was not only witnessed by me, but by two other people. Now, this is back in the mid-70s, you know. So a lot of these stories were uncommon even back then. It was starting to bubble up. You know, Whitley Strieber didn't have his book out yet. But, yeah. You know, so it was coming, you know.
And so you talked then about the two different types that came to you. What happened there?
Yeah. So my husband and I, our children were little, and, you know, we used to have like dates, and like on a Saturday night. So we'd make some daiquiris, we'd make a fire, and we had a pullout couch in the basement. And we'd be down there. The kids would be upstairs. And, you know, we'd have the fire. So there's this, you know, the fire is dying down. So there's like embers, you know, just a little glow. And I realize I wake up and my head is at the foot of the bed. And it's upside down. My head's hanging off the bed. And I'm like, ugh, you know, I'm waking up because of that, because it's not comfortable. And my eyes open up and, oh my gosh, trudging in the room, there's only one door in and one door out of this room. Trudging into the room are these, I don't know, tree stumps. I don't know how to describe them. There used to be a television show here in the 70s called Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. And they kind of looked like that. It was like a little bit of that E.T. thing, but E.T. had a neck. But it had the flappy feet, you know, those flappy feet underneath, and their arms were just kind of flappy to the side. And they were very square, and their teeth were sharp, and their eyes were angular, and they had this mottled effect around their forehead. And there's a number of them. There's just a line of them. They're trudging in, and they're going around the bed to my left, and I can't really see where they're going, you know, to the left. And I'm looking, you know, and I can see my husband's feet, like he's still there, but he's not doing anything. And he's a light sleeper. Okay. So they're coming in, and one of them kind of notices me that I'm waking up and that I'm noticing them. And I feel like it was a female. And everything is it's a telepathic conversation. You know, I'm not actually moving my lips. They're not actually talking either. And she says, "Oh, are we scaring you?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, is this better?" And then they all softened. They all shape shifted to a more rounder look. And I was like, "No." And then she, you know, she just ignored me. And she said, "Well, we're here to help your planet, to save your planet." And I swore at her. Because I didn't believe her. Like, you know, you're here to save the planet. Okay. And at that time, then I'm like, well, what does that entail? What does that mean? And I started to struggle and get my head up onto the bed. So I'm like, ugh. Over the years, I've been really working on moving out of that freeze mode. So I get my head up onto the bed, and there's my husband full asleep. And I really can't see the little creatures because they're, you know, kind of that short. Now my feet are where my husband's head are at, you know, where my head should be. And the first thing I notice is this iridescent light. And it's kind of like the light or lamp you would see in a surgical room, this pearlescence. And it's over kind of my feet, a little, you know, kind of towards my right. So it's physically stationed off of the bed. It's not hovering. I can't see if there's a stand or anything, but out from underneath the light comes this face, and it's smiling at me. And immediately I recognized it and knew it, and I knew that I had encountered this entity as a child. But I have no recollection of meeting this entity, but I do remember making drawings that were silly, like this head with a skinny body with twirly arms and legs. I would draw it, and then I would sit back and rock and laugh at it. And I never knew why I did this, but I would just rock back and forth and laugh. And I was like, I thought it was peculiar that I was doing it myself. And here was the skinny dude coming over me. And he's very pale. His arms and legs are very long, and I'll describe him a little bit more in a second. But I noticed he was wearing a Speedo, a black Speedo. His hips are about, you know, like if I was to describe like a juicy hamburger and hold it up in front of my mouth, like, ooh, I'm eating a hamburger. That's about the size of his hips. Very tiny, but very gangly. And, you know, I noticed I was watching Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And, you know, that's kind of the same entity at the end when the ship lands, this tall, skinny dude. Okay. And then if you know, like Jack Skellington from Nightmare Before Christmas, Mrs. Peregrine's School for Whatever Children. I mean, I'm starting to see it depicted in Hollywood a number of times, the skinny guy. So people know about him. And so he comes over on top of me and I blank out. Okay. And the next morning I wake up and my head's where it's supposed to be. Now, my husband, like I said, is a very light sleeper. So he normally, if I do anything, he's like, Dana, he would wake up and chastise me. But he didn't. So I don't know how my body got in one direction and then the next. And I looked over the side of the bed. And you should know, this might be a little TMI, but we would have, private time, and then we would get, back into normal clothes and wash up and all those kinds of things. Because we had small children, we don't know if we have to attend to them or, anything, emergencies or something. So I would typically have socks and, underwear and shorts and a bra and a shirt. And all of that was in a very perfect circle on the floor next to the bed. So that's unusual. And right away, I'm like, oh my God, because I know that in certain abduction scenarios or something, people's clothes would be in a puddle next to them. And it was perfectly perfect. My bra was perfectly in my shirt. My underwear was perfectly in my shorts. It was all stacked up as if my body had melted away, And I'm like, oh my God, I'm naked. So that said to me, what happened the night before actually was real. Now, fast forward, I'm writing the book and I'm talking to a friend, and I'm talking to her and I said, these aliens came. I've never seen this one type, these little, tree stumps, these little plugs. And I'm sure they took my DNA. I'm sure they took my eggs, and this is very upsetting to me. This is, and I'm having a little meltdown. And all of a sudden we realized, this is so many years later, and I'm writing the book and things start to come out as I'm writing. It's very cathartic. All of a sudden I realize, my God, they have my husband's DNA as well, because we've been intimate. And I'm like, now they have everything. They have everything to make a perfect human. Are they going to make a human? I mean, they said they're here to save the planet. Are you here to save humans and humanity? Or are you here to harvest us, harvest our organs? Are you cloning us? What are you doing? Are you melding with us? Because in Close Encounters, after the humans who had been, missing for so many decades, after they first came off of the ship, there were all these little strange little babies, these little alien babies. And so while I was writing the book and I saw that, I just was like, oh God, no, please don't let that be my children. And then out came the skinny guy, it just was very upsetting to, and I said to my younger son, he was born on 11/11, very auspicious, and he's an ancient soul. I said, if a man or a woman comes up to you and looks like you or your brother, it very well could be your sibling. And I mean, if they say, hi, I'm related to you, you have to know that this could very well be. So, I have more questions than answers. There's a lot of people that say they have answers for this, that, or the other thing, especially when it comes to UFOs or ETs, but I don't. I have more questions and I'm a little upset, if you're here to save the planet, could you at least talk to me about it? Let's have a conversation. You want to take my children? I guess it was non-negotiable, right?
Yeah, we hear about this, don't we? It's Dr. David Jacobs in the 90s were writing books about what he called the hybrids rather than the hybrids, and other abductees talk about being introduced to hybrid children and saying, well, this is your child and it doesn't look completely human or something.
Yeah, I don't know how I would react to meet one. I mean, because I'm such a mom, I'd want to grab the child and love it and know it. And, I guess to not know might be better. And again, this, I think, is one of the reasons why I don't want to have a regression or hypnosis. I'm not sure. Maybe I would do it if at the end of the session, they would say, okay, now you're going to forget. And then I could agree to that because I've had enough trauma going through these things. And a lot of people say, like, you're so normal, you know, like, why aren't you, you know, in the loony bin or something like that? And I'm like, yeah, I know. I don't know. I guess it's just a gift of my spirit and who I am. But, you know, I just don't want to keep poking that bear. And I don't know if I could handle more trauma, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel that the ETs, just like us, and they've got spaceships? Or do you think it's more weird than that, that it's multidimensional?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And I'm always up for any explanation. And I'm the person that always says both and all. I mean, we humans, you know, our understanding, you know, and my mom talked to me about this, you know, we can't explain God, we can't explain this, and anything that we humans can think, it's going to be bigger and larger and more. So I think this whole thing of spaceships that us humans do, I think that's a show. And the government knows that. I mean, the political leaders, they all know that. And so they're, you know, we're sitting in a tin can and going up and down, and that's a great show. But I think the real real travel is going through vortexes and wormholes. And I experienced a vortex one time. It showed up in a room. I don't know if they were trying to off me, but anyway. So I think, that's kind of part of Einstein's theory. I do think that there are steady wormholes that the government knows about, you know, especially, you know, we have all these small spaceships visiting. Well, there would have to be, you know, and, you know, the government is slowly coming out with it, you know, showing these UFOs and everything like that. But that UFO, you're going to tell me that it came from another galaxy, this little itty bitty thing? No. You know, it had to come from a mothership. And, you know, a mothership is kind of hard to move. But I mean, you know, look at Dune, if you've ever saw the movie Dune, you know, folding space and time.
Yeah.
Everybody's about folding space and time. And I think that is the key. You know, this world is nothing but frequency. You know, that's all it is. If we keep that in mind all the time, frequency. So, but other people, you know, they talk about the vortexes and even the girl that, when I was having cocktails and we were talking about the UFOs in our backyard, I said, you know, so many of these spaceships are reported to be silent. And I know that's true. So why was ours this low humming and vibration? Now, I think there was a spaceship outside my room at that time, because there was a light that would also go around in my bedroom. And I know it wasn't a car, because it was searching in my room, and it was a very strange light. So I do think that there are ships. I do think like these little sea monsters or plugs with the skinny guy, did they come through a vortex? You know, I didn't see how they got there. I didn't see them leaving. It could have been. So the answer is all of it's true.
They were kind of surprised that you could see them.
Yeah, I think so. Because she's like, oh, yeah, like, oh.
Like they were kind of just phased out of our dimension. And so if that was the case, they were surprised you could see them. Does that mean they're moving around a lot? And they just take it for granted we can't see them, and they could be right in the room with us now.
Well, the little sea monsters, they were solid. They were very, very solid. And the ETs that showed up, or the grays that showed in my room, they were very, very solid. But I do know that there were times, in my book I write about, there was an experience in the woods. And I was a little bit older, and I was tagged during that interlude, but I don't think it was the troop that normally visits me. But they move so fast and in a different frequency that you might see them out of the corner of your eye, or you might not see them at all. So I think what you're saying is also true. I think they can come in a solid form. You know, like I said, in that room, the room had shifted to a different frequency, and I think they look more solid than when they're in their natural environment, such as, you know, a fish in the water. They need to have their environment. Now, if they're traveling about like out in the, you know, like in the woods, when I saw the other ETs and they were grays, I don't think they could set up that frequency as easily. And so, you know, it's more of a flash. So I think both are true. I think, you know, and certainly the little plugs, they were able to shapeshift, you know, for me. And I think they physically all changed their appearances. Now, is that how they are? Is that their true form? I have no idea. You know, so I think it's all true. You know, I'm always like, it's all true. Yes, they can be solid and they can be in a different realm. And that's the thing I started my book off with. I wanted people to understand that, you know, human beings are benighted, or that's how I look at it. I feel that there's many realms living on top of us all at the same time, because I'm sitting in a house, I'm on a computer, I'm talking to you, you're across the planet, but underneath my house are worms and bugs in the dirt. And they have no clue about what we're doing right now up here on the surface. And, you know, I look at nature and nature shows us many of the same cycles, that if this is true, then that's true. So if the worms don't really know what's going on this planet, they don't know about Doritos or airplanes, can't us humans be just as benighted that, you know, we experience ghosts? You know, we experience these other entities and things flash in and out of the corners of our eyes. What's the truth then? Is this realm the truth of human beings? Or is the truth, could there be something else living right on top of us that we don't know about? You know, I think that's true.
And did you have times where the ETs would come into your room and you'd wake up and you'd know they were there, and then you'd find them bringing you back and you didn't know what happened in between?
Well, like I was saying, I don't recall them ever bringing me back, but I do remember giving them a tour of the house. And at the time when I was giving them a tour of the house, you know, they seemed friendly. For, you know, for all I can say is that I wasn't afraid, or I would have been in shock, or I would have tried to run. You know, so even though I was in a, you know, a hypnotic state or dream type state, even though I wasn't, had I been truly afraid, I think I would have reacted. So I don't like them. I don't trust them. But I know that when I've been around them, I was okay. You know, and I don't think that this is everybody's experience, but this was what happened with me. But I don't remember them putting me back. I mean, at this point, because it's been decades. I mean, if you were able to talk to me when I was like six, I probably would have said, yes, I remember it. You know, it's been so long. And I, you know, these memories kept floating away like a balloon. And a little voice inside my head kept saying, you have to remember, you have to remember. Because believe me, I just wanted to be normal. I wanted to fit in with other people. I knew this made me different, so I didn't talk about it. And then, you know, the memories would start to fade. And that was, to me, great. You know, let's just pretend that we're a normal person, that this isn't happening. You know, kind of in a way, it's almost like, you know, somebody that's been abused, you know, it's almost the same type of a trauma. Like, let's forget about this and let's go back to being normal. Can we do that? But the voice inside my head said, no, you need to remember this. Hang on to that balloon string. And I didn't know why, but my oversoul or something like that, you know, I've been told many times by psychics and others, they're like, no, you're supposed to write a book. You have to write this book. And so that little voice must have known that there was a book I was supposed to write, that I had to hang on to these memories in order to share them, because I want to share them and, you know, help other people who've had these experiences know that they're okay, you know, and that this is what's going on in this planet. You know, we're not alone. Everybody talks about disclosure. Well, there's already aliens living among us, and there's also species that come and go and visit.
You've had implants as well. You talk about a couple of them that I saw in the book. There's one on the back of your neck, but right. That just kind of disappeared.
Right. So I was, you know, down the end of the block talking to a neighbor lady, and she's one of my witnesses, and she can confirm that, you know, this happened. And there's a blip on the back of my book. I said, would you be willing to write a blip for my book? And she said, absolutely. So we're just sitting there, two moms chatting away next to the garbage cans, you know, and I'm picking at the back of my neck because I think it's like a zit, you know, I'm just sitting there and I'm doing this while we're talking, you know. I'm not going to say, oh, I'm picking a zit on the back of my neck, you know, and, you know, the zit kind of popped or whatever. And, I'm not telling her this, but, you know, I'm bringing my hand forward and, you know, kind of like slyly looking at my finger. And it wasn't the piece of pus or goo that I was expecting, you know, because I was going to examine it because it just seemed so weird, whatever was going on. It seemed weird. And, you know, I'm looking at it. And then all of a sudden, okay, the conversation is over with for me because it wasn't organic. It was like a microchip, very small microchip. And I'm like, oh my God, Lisa, look. And I show her my finger and she's like, oh my God, that just came out of the back of your neck. And I'm like, yeah. And it's square. Okay. And she picks it up with her finger and she rubs it in between her thumb and her, pointer finger. And she's rubbing it really hard. And she goes, oh my God, it's metal. Yeah. And then, you know, it's on her finger and we're discussing it. She keeps rubbing it. And at one point she's just sitting there holding it in front of both of us. And we're looking down at it and it vanishes. It fades away. It disappears. And this had to be a good minute 30, which seems like a short period of time. But really, if you count it down, it's not. And she's like, was that an implant? And I said, you know, I think it was. It looked like a microchip. And the funny thing was, we had been going to this woman who says that she extracts alien tech from your body. And we didn't know. We didn't know if what she was doing was real. But we signed up to do it because I'm like, well, I know I've been visited. I'm sure I have some implants or something going on. And so, you know, I just signed up for shits and giggles. Like I said, I don't really believe in anything until I experience it fully. And so we'd been paying this money and going to this lady. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, this microchip pops out. And as I was describing before, being out in the woods, this was in my neighborhood. And I was small. But immediately after I was down by the lake and all of a sudden I was up in the trees and I knew that I was surrounded by grays, but I couldn't really see them. And I think they were kind of blanking me out a little bit. But the next thing I know, I'm back down by the water and my rear end, my fanny above my cheeks was hurting, you know, a lot, like I'd been poked by a stick. So I ran home and I jumped up onto the counter in the bathroom. And we had this huge mirror, one of those big ones. And I looked and sure enough, there was this spot in my back. Now at the time, there was no blood, but it was deep. And it was a little bit more red to this. Now it's just beige. You would hardly notice it or anything like that. But I knew that I had been, even as a child, you know, I'm like 4 or 5, that they had done something to me. You know, so now as an adult, I'm like, well, that must have been an implant. Now, what came out of my neck, could it have been what they implanted? Had it traveled all the way up my spine? I don't know. I can't tell you. Do I still have an implant in my rear end? Mayhaps. Are there other things that I don't know about? That could be true, too. You know, but what was the function of the thing in the back of my neck? Because it was just too small to be really like a control device, maybe a tracking device. It didn't seem to have any like little fingers or anything, like it was attached, or maybe it broke away. I've never really explored any further with that.
The fact that you were working on trying to get rid of them is interesting, isn't it? But it's...
I know.
And I notice in the book, you say there were mornings when I was aware of my soul re-entering my body. was that that they had taken you, like, not physically, but your consciousness?
It could be, because as I also explained in the book, and I mentioned a little bit earlier about the ships at night, you know, and what was interesting was to hear Ronald Reagan talk about the Star Wars and everything. I really paid attention to what the presidents would say, because it seemed almost, and back in this time, it seemed almost like clues. I'm like, oh, you know what's going on, don't you? You know. So I thought, I think etherically, I would be on these spaceships, and sometimes physically. I'm not quite sure if I had been out on a ship when I was coming in the morning. That could be. That could be. You know, and I was always like tired. It seemed like, you know, I was doing a lot of work at night. And I knew this because I would be on these ships. And, you know, that's that thing with the close encounters, that bay door opening. I'm like, oh, my God, I know that bay door, you know. So I know they were collecting other people through the night, etherically, their souls or physically, you know, and working on them. And I couldn't really see what was going on the ships, at least some of the, you know, I could sense and know that they were there. And I sense and know that there were workers there that were human. I'm not sure if they were the white hats, you know, but all of this was going on. So, yeah, that's a good question. It could have been my soul coming back from having been on one of these missions.
If we say it's a soul or your consciousness is outside of your body, then that leads to thinking about there being an afterlife. And when you die, you carry on and then there's reincarnation. Did you ever get a sense that they were interacting with you from a very young age because you might have known them before you were born?
Well, I firmly believe that we do have a contract or an agreement as a soul before we enter this 3D realm, you know, this very dense realm, which is why it's hard for many entities to come here or be here in a physical form, such as, you know, the Nordics or the reptiles. Certainly, it seems to me that Anunnaki have no problem with it. They come in a physical realm, you know, as they look like a 3D human. But I think the reptiles usually have to take on, and I'm sorry if I'm mentioning too much, but I think a lot of them are more shapeshifters. I'm not quite sure how that all works, but I think that on a soul level, yes, I believe in an afterlife. I do believe that we continue on, that whoever you want to call is me, is aware when my body ceases to exist. I will be still aware of some existence. I will still be working and doing, and that's true, I believe firmly, for all of us, because I've seen other entities, such as angels. I've been punched, as you know, by a ghost who looked 3D also.
Yeah.
And I got pulled up to heaven one time for a parade. That was very strange. And also, I just figured out in my book that I described the firmament about four different places. Now, you know, that's a Bible thing. And you know, and I'm like, the firmament. And, you know, like I said, if I experience it, I have to believe it. And I'm like, oh, my God, I kind of hate myself because I'm like, yes, I have described the firmament. So now I have to believe it. You know, it's hard for me to say that. I don't want to say it. And I don't know why. I'm like, no, I don't believe in the firmament. OK, but I've described it and I've experienced it. So in my math, I have to say that I believe in it. Something's going on.
And I wanted to ask you about that time when you were woken up because this ghost was punching you in the arm. Could you tell us what happened there?
Yeah. So my neighbor told me, and then black, the one next to the one that found the microchip, her father had just passed away. And okay. And this was like maybe a week or two later or something like that, you know, we'll just set that. So I'm asleep. I'm in bed. La, la, la. And all of a sudden I got punched and like hard like hard. Like if you were angry, it's in my arm and it happened and I'm like, and then I got punched again, just, ooh, hard. And I look up and here's this skinny man, kind of a Fred Astaire type build. And he's wearing old timey railroad garb. And I recognize this right away. So in my mind, it's like all of these things are firing. Okay, here's old timey railroad garb. My grandpa worked for the railroad, but he was a stocky man. And this is not him. I don't know who this guy is. And he goes, are you going to work? And, you know, like more thoughts have to go through my head. Like, am I going to work? Because I used to have to go to work at like, get up at like 3 a.m. And so I'm doing a body check and stuff like that. And I could tell like, oh, I probably had a couple glasses of wine the night before or something like that. And I'm like, I probably went to bed late, you know, blah, blah. I'm like, no, you know, it's like a Friday or Saturday. And he's miffed. He's all upset. And he storms off walking around the bed, not floating or anything. He's storming off, you know, I can hear him. He's just like a normal human being. And he goes off into the bathroom. We have an ensuite bathroom. Storms off to the bathroom and I throw off the covers and I run, try to follow him into the bathroom. And in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, you know, like because I'm this person. I'm like, oh my God, is he standing there peeing? Like I'm going to have to give him a minute, you know, excuse me. Or is he going to turn around and try to hit me? Because you know, he was strong and he physically hit me. You know, I don't know what's going on, but thank God he wasn't in the bathroom. I kind of knew that was going to happen, but hey, you never know. So he was gone. Next morning, I call up, you know, my neighbor friend and I'm like, oh, my God, you won't believe this guy. And I hadn't put two and two together. And she goes, oh, my God, that had to be my dad. And she showed me a picture of him. I'm like, that's the one. So the thing is, I didn't know her dad worked for the railroad. And my grandpa worked for the railroad and they're about the same age. So I think her father was an engineer and mine was a brakeman. So they must have known each other. And, you know, there's that connection, that light of our soul. So he might have been visiting her, saw my signature mark, recognized it, walked up the train line. We're only about, you know, three houses difference or away from each other. So he walked the line, hey, you going to work? You know, saw my familiarity, my signature, you know. And no, I wasn't my grandpa. So I thought that, you know, that was such a cool confirmation and to get that also for her, from her, you know, and then to look at the picture. I've looked at other people's pictures of their past, their departed loved ones, and the pictures are always right on. I know the people. They visited me. So I thought that was cool.
You have these other things, these after effects after you've been visited. Have you had those after effects your whole life? And is there a whole number of them or is it something that's just like with electricity?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've had them my whole life and I don't know if some of them are the gift. Certainly both sides of my family had the gift. I'm discovering, I knew my one grandma on my father's side, but I'm discovering my other grandma. So I'm not quite sure, you know, I have that. But on top of it, you know, like I said, with the ETs, after they would visit me, I would have these other, you know, abilities. So I know, you know, like when I go down the streets or something like that, if a stoplight or a street light is off, it'll pick up my infrared. I think my infrared that I cast off is very large. And I've heard other people talking on other shows about, you know, having this large infrared signature with you. And so I know it's, you know, it's very huge. And I think my infrared triggers these lights. I also believe that my infrared or whatever, that I have some healing abilities for people, you know, psychic abilities, you know, all, you know, it's like everything. I have, you know, like a lot of these things. I don't use them for profit. I don't, you know, I don't have a shingle out. You know, I studied Reiki, you know, became a Reiki master teacher, but that was also in, you know, just me trying to learn about healing. And, but I think that everybody can have these abilities. I just, somehow some of it rubbed off or came through my DNA, you know. So who's to say? But I feel all humans have the ability to be healers. That's our divine gift.
It's super weird. And it's like you say, it's the title of the book. This is going to sound weird. People can get this on Amazon, can't they? It's on Kindle and they can get the paperback.
Right. And there's a hardcover, and I'm going to be, because right now the weather is just the worst, you know. So I'm going to be doing an Audible because I want it to be my authentic voice, because, you know, part of the book was writing this as a legacy for my descendants, because they need to know this. So this was kind of my first and foremost priority. And so I don't have that much money. I have more time than money. So I want my authentic voice, my frequency to be in an Audible. And I just got it loaded up onto Barnes & Noble. So it should be coming out on Barnes & Noble, but I don't know in the UK. I don't think you guys get Barnes & Noble, but it is on Amazon. And, you know, I was in Norway. I have some Norwegian people who know me. And so I'm not quite sure for the European people who are interested if I need to find a different a self-publishing company that I could so that, you know, other people could get that, because I don't know if there's a tax or something, you know, if it's easily done. I mean, are you able to, have you found it on Amazon?
Yeah.
My book?
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
I appreciate it. It's so nice to meet you. And thank you so much for having me. I'm just honored and, you know, look forward to, you know, hopefully coming to the UK again. And I'll shout out, and I would love to sit down and have a pint with you.
Yeah, great.
Take care, Simon.
And that was an interview with Dana Louise about her book, This Is Gonna Sound Weird, an awakening memoir of a woman's close encounter experiences. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can hear the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Our Paranormal Afterlife, and there are over 300 episodes. On the Our Paranormal Afterlife podcast, I look into evidence of the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. I also release an extra episode of Our Paranormal Afterlife every Thursday, and that's called Paranormal Stories. My website is pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regression. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you've signed up to Patreon, you get a 25% discount. I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. And have you ever felt that if you told them to stop, that they would do?
No, I didn't. And it never really occurred to me to tell them to stop until I was older, you know, like.